Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock and it's time for a Talk Magic. And today, I am here with somebody I've got so much respect for. He is one of the top mentalists in the country, if not the world. He's an incredible thinker of magic and mentalism, and a really, really nice guy as well. Somebody who I've interviewed many, many years ago on the Wizard Product Review, and I'm getting a chance to interview him again now. It is the one and only, the legend, Louis LaBelle. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm excited. I'm so excited that...
Yeah, me too.
That I've got you on the channel. Thanks. I know how busy you are, and we'll talk about this. And I know you're performing, and obviously you've got your own stuff going on. And I also know you're working very closely with Dee and the rest of the guys at the 1914. So I know that you've got a lot going on. So thank you for finding the time to come on the channel.
Oh, no problem at all. Thank you for having me on your show. Like, this is so good for me. I'm really excited about this. And it's just an honor to be asked to do this, and I'm really looking forward to it.
This is brilliant. So obviously you've been in magic for a very, very long time, and there's a lot of stuff that I want to talk to you about. But just for people that don't know who you are, I imagine there's somebody out there who doesn't know who you are. I can't imagine where they are, but maybe they live in the Outer Hebrides or something, I don't know. But there's somebody out there who doesn't know who you are. Let's go from the very beginning and let's talk about your origin story. When did you get into magic? How did that all come about?
Do you know, it was just a classic sort of childhood interest. I don't know how it is in other parts of the world, but definitely here in the UK, most magicians start with being bought a magic kit. And then you learn the tricks. And I started by not being able to do them very well, but then having the encouragement of my friends and family to sort of keep me going. And then it just kind of went from there. And then I started at a very young age, so I didn't really understand much about anything other than these tricks are fun. This looks like magic to people. But I was fortunate enough to join it's got no connection to the actual magic circle, but it was called the Merseyside Junior Magicians Club. So it was like a magic circle for kids. And the guys that were running that were like professional magicians. They performed all around the world. So it was a good opportunity for me really to get a really sort of good start from an early age. And then they introduced me to other things as well when there was auditions for little shows, you know, kids magic shows, because I was also a kid at the time that I could perform at. And then there's a few other things as well, such as my first ever TV appearance, which we can talk about in a bit. And it just kind of went from there. It's been one of those things that I've fallen in love with and then fallen back out of love with. And then basically magic just keeps finding me again. It just keeps coming back to me no matter what I do in life. So then I decided instead of being a magician for my life, I will just live my life and magic will find its way into it, regardless of what I'm doing, whether I'm working on a pirate ship or whatever else. Magic just finds its way back to me and then sort of integrates into what I'm doing with my life at the time, rather than me kind of making my whole life about magic.
That's so really interesting philosophy. So I suppose I've got several questions about that. So first of all, do you consider yourself a professional magician, or do you consider yourself somebody you tell me?
So I've kind of gone full circle. I used to consider myself a professional magician. And then for many years, I considered myself a professional mentalist, just because, I mean, I know there's a lot of debate about this, but I do see them as separate art forms, although they're very similar. It's like playing a piano and playing a violin. They're both musical instruments, but they're different in their own right. So mentalism became more my thing. It kind of resonated with me a lot better than magic did. But in the last sort of year or so, I've been looking at the archetypal magician, the original sort of magician who didn't do tricks or magic, the original magician who understood the sort of transformational power of ritual on the mind and reality of people who witness it. So I don't consider myself a professional magician. I don't promote or advertise myself as a professional magician. That's just kind of a little philosophy I keep to myself in the back of my mind. Whether I'm doing entertainment or whether I'm doing something else, the sort of original sort of archetypal magician is there in the background. And I just kind of express that in my own ways through mentalism, through a little bit of magic that finds its way into what I'm doing, but I don't sort of dress it up as magic. So yeah, I'm on kind of a weird path. I mean, I am right now. If we have another call in a year from now, I might be totally different again. You might see me here in a top hat with white gloves on doing a dove act, who knows? But I can't say for definite I'm sticking to this path. I mean, it feels like I am, but I don't know what's going to enter my path later on down the line, or, you know, what's going to change my opinions or views on things, or even I might just decide to change things up and explore areas of magic that I've not yet explored. Like if I spent my life being an abstract painter, I might decide I want to do photorealistic portraits and change, but I'm still an artist. I still want to be an artist. I might just find different ways of expressing that.
Okay. So what advice would you give somebody who's an amateur magician, a hobbyist, and they're wanting to take that leap into becoming a full-time entertainer? Have you got any advice for them?
I think rather than trying to promote yourself too soon and too early on, because that's the thing, isn't it? You get excited about magic, and then the first thing you want to do is show people and get paid to do it, because that's the dream, essentially, isn't it? To find what you love and then get paid to do it. But the problem is, if somebody was going to be a professional singer, they've got to spend years developing their voice and all, you know, if they're lucky, not years, even just months, but just sort of getting good at it to the point where they can become a professional. But now, I mean, not to put any hobbyists off, and I certainly wouldn't want to do that, but I think there are so many people that want to be a professional magician but aren't willing to put the time and effort into behaving like... The business side of it is one thing, and then the other side of professionalism is the other. Like, do you have you developed your skills enough to be able to then bring that to the world and potentially get paid for it as well? So I think, you know what, just keep your passion for the magic. If you're struggling to get gigs, it doesn't matter. Like, even if you're a professional watching this right now and you haven't worked because of lockdowns and restrictions, it doesn't matter, because your passion for your art is still there. Keep refining your art, keep developing your routines and your style and your presentations, and then when you get back into the world or when you get your first gig, you'll be so prepared for it that you're going to look like you've been doing it your whole life, even if you've only been doing it a few months. And the thing is, it doesn't really take that long to... Of course, there's all kinds of incredible sleight of hand that really, really does take time and effort, but you know what, to get good at being a magician, it doesn't take that long if you've got the motivation and the determination to do so. I think if it's something you really want in life, if you want to be in a situation where you are getting paid to show people your art, then it will find you. You've just got to develop yourself and your style and your sort of, not even persona, but you're just who you are, your identity. Because although we do have a persona on stage and things like that, but When you leave the stage, or when you leave the performance environment, that magician is still in you. It's still a part of you. It's not a separate character that you step away from. I mean, you might be a character on stage, but you still bring the magic off stage with you. It's still a part of who you are. So I think it's more about developing your identity rather than just your onstage persona. I mean, there's no reason you can't do both. But I think if you're going to be a magician, live as one, and your life will be full of magic.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Let's talk for a second about magic versus mentalism, because you are so incredibly knowledgeable when it comes to magic, but you do identify as a mentalist more so than a magician. Have you got any advice what made you decide, I suppose, the first question is, what made you decide to go down the mentalism route? What made you decide? So you've got into magic. There's all these wonderful different ways of performing it. What made you decide to go down the route of, right, okay, I'm gonna focus more on the mentalism side of things?
So I think it was just a like a sort of a taste or a deep interest in anything mysterious, anything unknown, anything outside of what we're immediately familiar with. And one of the last great mysteries is the human mind. Still to this day, there is not a single piece of technology that can count, weigh, or measure the human mind. And in fact, even neuroscientists don't bother analyzing the mind at all, because neuroscientists get into the lab and they've literally got nothing. They can analyze the brain and brain function and activity because we can get in there and have a look. But when it comes to the mind, we've got nothing. So it's one of the last great mysteries, and that was always really attractive to me. And for me, the main sort of difference, really, I mean, this is a discussion that could go on forever, the difference between magic and mentalism, because although magic still happens within your spectator, I was more interested in the idea that in our mind, in our imagination, anything is possible. So I thought, well, what if that's my playground? What if I work within a space that everybody alive today can agree that anything can happen in the imagination? So suddenly it just opens so many more things up for me to be able to play with and interact with and sort of dwell in, rather than, because when I was performing magic, again, although the feeling of magic happens in them, it was happening in the physical reality in front of me. You know, for example, changing one card into another, that's something that happens there. And then I suppose the reason why that feels magical is because your spectators understand that that shouldn't happen in this reality, yet you've made it happen. And I think that's what makes it magical, and they get that feeling. But for me, I wanted to do the same things. So I wanted to be able to change a card from one into another, but not physical, and just do it all up here in a space where anything is possible anyway. And I just kind of like living in this idea of a mind. But then I went from being all about the mind to various sort of levels of reality and things like that. That's something we'll get into later. But yeah, so to stop myself from rambling, the main difference was, as much as I love magic, and I still do, and when I'm hanging out with magicians, I don't even talk about mentalism. I practice magic with them. For me, it was just a personal interest, because if mentalism or magic didn't even exist, I think I would still be interested in the mind and psychology and now the nature of human consciousness and anything mysterious. I love that. And I just want to immerse myself in that and familiarize myself with it as much as I can. It's almost like a journey where there's no known destination. It's all about just exploring the whole idea or potential of the mind itself. I feel like I'm rambling a little bit now, but I'm sitting here thinking
this is absolutely fascinating. It really is. on the subject of that, because when you think about magicians, there's certain things magicians do that they rely on as kind of almost being a money shot when performing to the audience, like sponge balls, now balls in the hand. Oh, look, now you're holding a glass block instead of a deck of cards or whatever it may be. Mm. Typically, as a mentalist, you don't have that kind of, you know, it's more of a slow build. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because one thing that you've done recently with the 1914 is you brought out the Project Revelations, which was when you said, well, you know, there's a million different ways to get the information. How do you reveal it? Because everybody most mentalists reveal the information that they've received in the same way. And you made the point of saying there's so many different ways of doing this. And I thought the Revelations Project was absolutely brilliant. Even as somebody who's not a mentalist, I learned so much from watching that project. So can you talk about your concepts that you shared on that a little bit? Would that be okay?
Yeah, so essentially I can kind of sum it up in a single sentence. If you were performing at an event, whether you were paid there to be there professionally or you were just doing it for friends, if you're performing in a place where there's people, if you're doing magic, that's very easy to photograph. If you've got a photographer with you, they can very easily get pictures of the magical moment. They can photograph you doing things. But mentalism is very hard to photograph. In fact, if you look at any photograph of mentalism taking place, it just looks like a conversation. So if the reveal doesn't rely on the method, so for example, if you've got your method to achieve whatever it is that you're going to do, then the rest is just acting. Like, you can reveal, you've now got the freedom to play with this and do whatever you want. You can dream up any ideal scenario. Like, if you genuinely did have these incredible powers of the mind or were able to influence people or read people or do anything like that, what would you want that to look like? If you woke up tomorrow morning and didn't need methods to do these things, ask yourself what you would do and what would that look like and how would it come across? Because then you can actually just start doing that and you don't even need real powers to do it because you've already got all your mentalism methods. So it's kind of like when I do performances now, I don't create routines that will go with the performance. I create presentations that will go with them. So I can rely on any number of mentalism methods I've already got, ones that I've created or ones that I've learned or whatever. And then I just decide, okay, how do I want this to come across? If this was a, you know, when I approach this table, if this was a theater and they were the audience, what show do I want them to see? And now because I can rely on my methods and I know they're going to work anyway, now I've got all of this freedom to just do literally anything I want and then give it some meaning and give it some reason. You know, if I don't want my spectators to leave thinking, oh, this guy read my mind. I want them to leave thinking, you know what, this guy talked to me about something from my childhood that I've not really spoken to anybody about. And then suddenly they've got a more interesting story that they can share with other people and then tell themselves over time, which will only get better over time as well. So it's kind of like, when it comes to, I think from a mentalist mindset, it's exciting. Like, and as a magician as well, it's exciting to use your methods. It's exciting to do something in front of your spectator and that kind of voice in your head goes, yeah, I just did that right in front of your nose. That's fun. And we're always very quick to get to the reveal because it's like, this is the good bit. This is the bit that's going to hit them. But we know that's inevitable. That's going to happen anyway. We know that bit's coming. So why not just have fun along the way? You know, instead of just asking them to repeat something over and over in their mind, which I'm guilty of that as well. What's the point? Like when I'm looking at somebody saying, yeah, just repeat this over and over in your mind, I might as well spend that time doing something else, anything else that looks good or feels good or is even interesting. You know, if somebody from the other side of the room looks over and sees what I'm doing, they can either watch me talking to somebody or they can watch me doing some sort of interesting or unusual thing. And the best part about that is the method doesn't rely on that. The method's happening anyway. I've already definitely got that reveal. So I might as well just have fun with this and create flowers where there are none. Essentially, you're constructing a dream within reality. And you're in control of that. How do you want this dream to unfold?
Wow. That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Would you say that a magician who performs magic but also tries to perform mentalism, do you think it trivializes the mentalism? Because that's a question I get on this channel an awful lot. Every week, it seems like I get the same question. I'm a magician. I want to do mentalism. Can I combine the two or do I have to just go on full on mentalism? Is there a way of doing the two without trivializing it?
So I tried this. I tried when I was making the shift from magic to mentalism. There was a few gigs that I was doing when I was like, you know what? I'm really into this mentalism thing. I have mentalism things. I'm going to do some of that in and amongst my magic. And I started just doing it anyway. And it was all because the thing is, once they've gotten this image in the mind of, oh, this is the magician, he does magic, they then just assume that everything that follows that is also magic with a trick. And I don't think it's given the same attention or the same engagement as something that was just mentalism would. So then I tried doing things where I'd show them magic, and then if they were reacting really well or if I was really enjoying performing for them, I would then sit myself down and go, you know what, this is fun and I love to do this, but let me show you something that I wouldn't normally doing this environment, but I think we've got something going here and I want to try something else. And then I was just making that up at the top of my head, but I'd say things along those lines to sort of try and change the tone or the atmosphere a bit and go into mentalism. And that kind of worked, as long as you separate, like if you do an ambitious card routine and then reveal a star sign, they're going to be seen as magic. Whereas I think if you demonstrate that there is some sort of difference here, it's like, okay, magic aside, I want to try something that I feel might not work, because I'll be honest with you, I'm going to try and do this for real. And then if you can change their expectations, I think you can change how they view the mentalism, and they won't just see it as magic. But then after a while, I just fell in love with mentalism, and I thought, you know what, I can't pull off mixing the two. I'm sure there are some people that can, but for me, I just had to kind of, and it was heartbreaking at first, I had to abandon magic and then just do mentalism. And then I was like, oh, I've spent all these years developing sleight of hand and all these incredible magic routines that I love, and now I'm not going to use them. And I was disappointed about that at first, but then, as the saying goes, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. Suddenly now, if I'm performing as a mentalist and I've got a deck of cards in front of me, I can get away with so much more because they're not even expecting sleight of hand. As a mentalist now, if I pull out a deck of cards, nobody's burning my hands. Nobody's asking if they can examine the deck. I can do the sloppiest classic pass in the world, obviously not intentionally, but if it happens to be sloppy, that's okay, because they're just not expecting a trick. They're seeing me as something different. They just can't. It's like when it's like if there was somebody claiming to be a psychic and somebody claiming to be a mentalist who says it's all trickery, most people can't tell. They can't put two and two together and say, oh, are they both using the same techniques? Most people just go, well, yeah, they're different. That one's a psychic. They're doing it for real. You're doing it for fake. And it's and so people can't see that sort of that difference. So even in the weekends when I'm performing alongside two magicians, they know they're in a magic venue. They know they've seen magicians. But then when I get to the table, it just changes because I don't do or say anything that you'd expect a magician to. And because I'm not behaving like a magician and they're not seeing me do magic, it just changes everything for me. And then it gives them a whole new experience. So then they've seen magic and mentalism. So sorry. This is good. By the way, every question you ask me is going to end up with one of these big, long rambles. But
great, because this is what I want. You know, it's fascinating speaking to you and getting your opinion on this stuff, Lewis. It really is.
Like for me, so now, especially with performing in the bar, which we'll talk about in a bit, we do get people to come back week after week to see me. So we've got Terry and Ben. Some people will come in saying, "Oh, is Ben here? We want to see the cards." Or they say, "Is Terry here? We want to see the coins." Or they say, "Is Lewis here? We want to see the mind reader." So I do get people coming back week after week. And then I see them at the table and I think, oh, I've performed for these people 5 weeks running. What more material can I possibly show them? So then I've already established myself as a mentalist or a mind reader or whatever. So when I sit down and then do a classic sort of pseudo gambling demonstration, it's still fun. They still separate it from the mentalism. They go, yeah, well, we know he's a mind reader, but he can also do this. That's fascinating. And so for me, it works the other way around. If I establish myself as a mentalist first, and then I say, you know what? Because some of the mentalism I do is kind of heavy and can get a bit emotional. So then it can be almost like, oh, by the way, on a lighter note, here's another thing I'm interested in that I feel you're going to love. And then I can get away with any. I tend to stick to the, I mean, I'm not great at gambling demonstrations, but I make it look like that. So it looks like, oh, yeah. Not only does he do this stuff with the mind, but he's also pretty good with a deck of cards. So for me personally, it works better to be the mentalist first and then the magician second. And then I can get away with doing both.
That's great. That's absolutely fantastic. And another question we get on the channel a lot, which I think would be a great question to ask you, is what's your opinion on using, well, I think I know your opinion, but I'd love you to talk about it. Your opinion of using playing cards in mentalism, because I know you have lots of effects that use playing cards, and we talked off camera about harmony, which I think, you know, yeah. I've done that for years. And for me, that's one of the best tricks. It's one of the, I present it obviously as a card trick. I know you don't, but whether you're a magician or a mentalist, I think that's one of the best. And nobody knows it. It's a magician fooler. You do that at a convention. I've floored so many magicians with that. I've floored Ryland with it, who's an obnoxious little sausage who thinks he knows everything. Like every magician I've ever shown it that to, it kills. It makes no sense. But that's a card trick, and you're performing as a mentalist. So how you hear some mentalists that go, no, you should never use playing cards ever. It should be pure. What's your opinion on that?
I think when I've heard mentalists say you shouldn't be using playing cards, then maybe they shouldn't be using playing cards. I think if they want to be if they're a mind reader, then there are more interesting things in somebody's mind they could be reading rather than playing cards. But if you're doing mentalism, I think it's fine. Like pretty much every night when I'm performing, I'll pull out a deck of cards and I simply explain that the reason why I use playing cards is because of the history of them. You see, long before they were used for playing games with, they were used for fortune telling. People believed that every single card in the deck had a very detailed and very specific meaning. And apparently, the card that you chose could tell you all kinds of things about your life. So tell me, would you be interested to hear what the cards have to say about you? And then there might be a little bit of a reading in there. But once I've reframed the deck of cards, it's kind of okay from there, because even if at the beginning they're expecting magic when I pull them out, they're not about to see magic. So even if for the first 5 minutes they're like, oh, here we go, magic, that, then they're not going to see it. It's going to be something else. It's going to be more of the mind in nature. And then I think they're an interesting historical item anyway. Like, playing cards are fascinating, and you, like, people know magicians use them, but they're still more commonly, of course, used for playing games with. So it makes sense that there's also something else you can do with them. They're not only a tool for magicians. Like, people see cards and see magic, but most people around the world see games. They understand that this is a tool. And if you can use this particular tool for one thing, that's fine. I don't think there's any problem with using playing cards in mentalism at all, especially because of the history of them. And especially if you feel uncomfortable about using cards in mentalism, just try it once and then you'll very quickly change your mind, because as soon as people react to your mentalism with cards and not your magic, suddenly it'll be okay. You'll find yourself going, yeah, why haven't I been doing this the whole time? Yeah. And one thing I would advise against is, I hate that whole thing of, ooh, disguise the fact that you're good at handling a deck of playing cards so they don't expect any. The thing is, if you're a professional, and you're using cards as your tool in a professional environment, you should be able to handle them. Like, if you've been booked because you've got a good reputation, you're good at what you do, don't turn up and start doing this with cards, pretending you can't. Like, you're supposed to be good at this. It's okay if you handle a deck of cards naturally and normally. In fact, it's quite satisfying for them to watch, because you're going to handle them better than they can. So I definitely disagree with that whole thing of pretending that you're not good at them. Because again, if you riffle shuffle a deck of cards, not one member of your audience is going, oh, I bet you he can do a double lift. I bet you he can force a card. They're not thinking that. They don't even know these things exist. So if you just behave like a normal human being, and if you're somebody who's spent time working with cards, even if you are only doing mentalism, if you're doing readings with them, if you're doing mind reading or anything like that, you know, if this is a tool of your trade, you should be familiar with it and comfortable with it.
Mm. I agree, actually. I completely agree with that. So here's, I got another question for you. Moving slightly away from the mentalism side of things. You're obviously known as a creator, and you've created a lot of effects and routines over the years. Was the first thing that you ever created Paint the Roses Red? Was that your first release?
It was my first DVD. I think my first release before that was a stack deck that I came up with when I was about 16. And obviously I didn't understand what it was like to release things and put things out there. So luckily not a lot of people saw that. I was just happy with myself. Oh, look, I've created a stack. And I thought, yeah, everyone's going to buy this and love it. And they didn't. Not because they didn't love the stack, but just because I wasn't ready to be releasing things. So then I did that DVD, Paint the Roses Red, and I put a few things on there. And again, at the time, I didn't really understand, because it was my first project, it was my first proper release, I didn't understand pretty much anything. I just had these routines that I'd put together and I was proud of, and, you know, I've created this and I've created that. I'm going to put a little collection together. And then I was fortunate enough to be offered by Dee and Jack at the 1914 the first time round if I wanted to do a project with them. And I thought, yeah, you know what, this will be really good, this will be really fun, because for many years I didn't even understand that you could create routines or effects. I just thought they existed. I didn't even question where they came from. I was like, yes, magic exists, you buy it and you learn it. So then I kind of fell into this little groove of like, wow, like you can make it, you can create this for yourself, and people want to see it, and other people will perform this. Well, yeah, let's do this. So then, yeah, and then it just kind of, I'm glad I did that though. Although I mean, I'm still, especially harmony and things like that, I'm still proud of some of the routines on there. But I look back at that and I just cringe at how I spoke to the camera and how uncomfortable I was on camera. But if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have released some of the things or any of the things I've put out today. So I'm really thankful for that and glad that I did that all those years ago.
And what advice would you give somebody who wants to become a creator? Just so that people are aware, you obviously have come full circle. Your first project was with the 1914. The stuff that you're putting out now is with the 1914. And I know you're working very closely with Dee. and the 1914 on various different projects, and you're helping them in various different ways. So you're uniquely qualified to answer this as somebody who works with a production company, but also as a creator yourself. What advice have you got for people who want to create magic or mentalism?
Definitely document your creations, whether you film them just and then, because one great thing to do is to film your creations and then upload them as an unlisted video on YouTube. And then you've always got that there to go back to and have a look at. Because so many times I've created something and then just forgotten about it. And then a while later, I've gone, oh, what was that thing? And I just wish I had some form of video or whatever of it just to remind myself, or, you know, keep a notebook. Just sort of journal or document your progress. Have the courage or the willingness to create things without worrying if other people have already made them. Because that's one thing, isn't it? So many people show me stuff they've created and their biggest concern is, oh, what if this already exists? What if this is already out there? But if you start with that whole what if, you know, if I sit down to create something now and I go and I have an idea and I go, well, what if that already exists? Suddenly I'm going to shut that. That's just going to destroy my creative process. And I'm just going to go, well, there's no point working on it then. Like, firstly, if you're just going to perform them for yourself, you know, if you want to create something for yourself and it already happens to exist somewhere out there and on the market, that's okay. You know, you've still got something incredible, go out there and perform it. But if you're going to release something, that's when, of course, you need to find out, is it original? Is it unique? Has it been done before? Is it a variation of something? Does it need crediting? Have you borrowed moves? Have you used certain slides? You know, like, what was your inspiration for it? But all of that doesn't need to come into the creation process. I don't need to sit here going, all right, so it's going to use this move and that's by that person. But then it's a very, I'm just not going to get anywhere if I do that. I'm better off just creating and forgetting the world even exists. And then when I've got something that I'm really happy with, that's great. And then if I am going to release it, that's when it's time to get serious and go, okay, here it is, the fully completed routine that I feel I've created. Now I just need to check every aspect and element of it to see if there's anything that you know, like, does it already exist? And that way I can't release it. Do I need somebody's permission for something? Does it need credit? You know, all of that should come afterwards. I think when you're creating something, just have the freedom to play. And I think the easiest way to create anything is to just play. Just play until you begin to create. So if you want to do something with a deck of cards, sit there and play with them, have a few ideas of kind of what you want to do. Forget about method. Just, you know, think of it as a story or a film. If I was in a film right now, what would I do? And then find the best method to get you there. And then just play with it. Because then that's how I create anything. I'll just play and play and play. And then when I stumble upon something, I'll go, ooh, all right, okay, there's something here. That was interesting. And now I've got an avenue to go down and I can kind of refine it from there and develop it from there. So yeah, just start with nothing. And don't intend to come out of it with anything. You might sit down for hours one day trying to create something and just end up with nothing. That's fine. That's absolutely fine because you've still kept yourself engaged in the creation process. It's like one thing that I often recommend to mentalists, but magicians could do this as well, is write poetry that you don't intend to show to anyone. Just sit there and write it for yourself. Type it on your phone and then immediately delete it. Because it's not the poem that matters, it's the fact that you've spent time in that creative process actually doing it. It's almost like you're working the muscle that allows you to be creative. So it doesn't matter if you write a poem and it goes nowhere, it's because you've put so much time and effort into just creating something. And I think the same goes for creating magic or mentalism. It's just create something, forget the world exists, don't plan on showing it to anybody, just create something for you. It might be shockingly bad. It might be terrible, but it doesn't matter. You've still created something. It doesn't have to set the world on fire. It just has to keep, you just have to keep your creative juices flowing and keep your mind engaged in the process of creating things. Because that's the hardest part. If you sit down, if you've not created anything before and you sit down and go, okay, I'm going to create a routine. The hardest part is not creating the routine. The hardest part is just getting yourself into the mindset to be able to create something in the first place. So as long as you just keep getting into that and giving it a go, sooner or later, you are just going to get better at it and you're going to feel more comfortable in that headspace, putting things together and making them work and figuring out what doesn't work and then just taking them from there.
That's probably the best answer that I've ever had to that question ever. That was amazing. Absolutely amazing. So let's just assume that somebody's created a trick and they are very happy with it and they've workshopped it and, you know, they've got it to a point where they think it's ready to be released to the world and they've checked and as far as they are aware, it's unique to them.
Mm.
What do they do with it then? They want to release it. I suppose my question is, so many people that come into this business, we put creators up on pedestals, don't we, Lewis? I mean, within this industry, it's like, oh, they're a creator of magic. And I think a lot of people that come into magic as an amateur, they eventually want to create magic, which is why you see so many bad magic downloads. But that's a thing for another topic for another day. What should people do? Should they release it themselves, self-publish it? Should they go to a publishing company like the 1914? And if they do decide to go to a publishing company, how do you get on their radar? Like, how would people get on your radar, for example?
So I think when it comes to releasing anything, firstly, ask yourself why you want to release it. Do you want to make loads of money? Because it might not happen.
Hang on, Lewis. Whoa. You're telling me you can't become a millionaire from releasing magic tricks?
Well, you can try. Well, the thing is, whether you make millions or whether you make buttons, it's what are you releasing it for? Are you doing it because you want to make money? Are you doing it because you want to establish yourself as a creator? Are you doing it because you feel you've created something good and feel that other performers could benefit from learning this and then putting it in their performances? Or are you releasing something just to show the world, look, I've come up with this, I'm proud of it, and I just want you guys to see it? So ask yourself why you want to release it. Because the thing is, if you don't want to make loads of money and you just want to have your own creation, like, because it's your baby, it becomes your masterpiece. And if you want to put that out into the world, then it just depends. Look at your options. You know, there are some companies that will just throw out anything and yours will be popular for a day or so. And then it gets lost in the swamp of all the other stuff that comes out. There are some companies that really specialize in unique and, you know, sort of, like they choose quality over quantity, so they might not release loads of things, but the things they do release are special and highlighted in a different way. And then it depends. Find a company that suits your style, and if you feel that, and then look at the other stuff they release as well, because if your stuff is not at all anything like what they've put out before, that might be good or it might be bad. It might be good because you've got something amazing and they're going to love it. Or it might be bad because it just doesn't really suit their branding or what they've become known for. Because don't forget, magic companies have got huge followers, like a huge amount of followers, a huge sort of, not really customer base, but huge amounts of people with a particular idea in mind of the material they want to buy and practice and learn. So these companies have to recognize, they obviously know their audience and they know what their audience will want. So if you create something that you're proud of and then you take it to a production company and they don't want it, well, don't take that to heart. You know, maybe it just doesn't suit their brand or their audience, or, you know, maybe they just weren't a particular fan of it, but that's okay. Take it to somebody else and just find where you'd be proud to see it. That's the thing. If you could release something in the night and then the next morning wake up and check online to see where it is, where would you be proud to see your release? Where would you go, you know what, this fills me with joy? Because then it doesn't matter why you released it, because you're proud to have it there. And so the best thing to, and now it's actually easier now more than ever to get in touch with production companies, because I mean, years ago it was like the hardest thing in the world. You could be sitting on an absolute brilliant routine and then trying to get that released and out there was a nightmare. But now, even on websites, there are ways where it's like, you know, have you created a routine or an effect? You know, get in touch with us, pitch it to us, show us. And then And then don't worry if you don't hear back straight away, because all think of how many people around the world are submitting their creations to these companies. They've got a lot to get through. And aside from that, they've got loads of other stuff on their plate. So you won't get an immediate response. In some cases, you won't get a response at all. But it's like that with anything in life. Just know that however a magic company responds to your creation is no reflection of your creation and you as a performer. It might just not be right for them, or they might just not be interested. It doesn't mean that what you've got is bad or wrong in any way. It just might not be right for them. So I think make sure it's ready, because companies can help you with crediting. They can help you with researching moves and things like that. So you're not expected to do all of that yourself. You're not expected to suddenly know the entire history of magic and know if your routine is entirely original, because companies can help you with that. Just do your best and then approach them. And if they're happy with it and they want to collaborate with you and release it together with you, then they will also help you on the crediting and the and stuff like that. But I think the most important thing is to just not be so quick to want to release something. Don't just come up with anything and go, oh, great, need to release this. Take your time with your releases. Because there have been times when I've almost released something and then decided not to. And then I was glad I didn't, because then a year later, that routine is so much better. And then when I release it, I'm like, oh, I am so glad I gave it one more year before I brought this out, because it's so much better now. And it deserves that. It deserves my best. It might not be the best, but it's my best. And that's what I mean. And unless it's your best, don't be so quick. There's no rush to release it. It doesn't have to be out there right away. Take your time with it. The magic companies aren't going anywhere. They'll always be waiting ready for you. Just make it your best and then take it to them and say, hey guys, this is what I've got. And I think that's the best way of going about it. Just make sure it's ready, and then make sure you want to release it as well. I know plenty of people that have come up with something, thought about releasing it, and then gone, you know what? I don't want every magician in the world performing this. I kind of just want to keep it to myself. And if you feel that, that's okay too.
Yeah.
And there are some people that worry that if they create one good thing, it's like, well, will I ever be able to create anything? Is this it now? Have I just created this one thing? But like, the truth is, you won't. You're going to create something else, and then something else, and then something else. It's always the way. And I wouldn't worry too much about, like, if you've never released anything before, I wouldn't worry too much about how people see you. Because I'm not the best I'll ever be. I don't come across on camera the best I ever will. You know, I don't perform the best I ever will. None of that is there right now. But if I waited to release something until I was the best I'll ever be, I might never release anything, because there's no rush to get to the best. It's all about being the best you can be right now. So don't let your sort of, how can I put this? If you're worried about talking to a camera, if you're worried about performing something on camera to a group of people, and you've got a camera crew around you, and then trying to teach it, don't worry about that. Because if you were suddenly an expert in that, or if you suddenly believed you were an expert in that, there's probably something wrong. If you woke up one day and went, "Ah, yeah, I'm the best at this. I'm going to teach this. I'm going to rock this," that's probably not. That probably goes past confidence and into arrogance. Whereas, like, it's okay to be a bit nervous and have some confidence in yourself, but it's probably a good thing if you're a little bit worried about how the, because if nobody knew who I was and I released something tomorrow, suddenly everyone who sees that is also going to see me. And if I was so concerned about what are they going to think of me, how are they going to see, well, it's not going to matter. As long as they like the routine that I've put out and they can appreciate that I've done my best, the best that I can in this moment, that's going to be fine. Because if they then take that routine out into their performances, they're not going, oh, Lewis Laval come up with this. They're going to make it their own. They suddenly don't care about me.
Yeah.
They'll just be, you know, happy that I put this out and didn't let my nerves get to me and not make me end up putting out in the first place.
Again, brilliant advice. And the one thing that I've noticed about the 1914, is they really care about making sure that the instruction is delivered, and it doesn't matter how long that takes. Like, I can't imagine many production companies that would have took on the Revelations project. because it's not instant gratification, is it? It's not like, hey, right, learn this new thing and you're going to be able to do this immediately. Yeah. It's more of an in-depth theoretical thing. And I think magic needs more projects like that. And that's what I think that you guys at the 1914 are doing so well.
Yeah, that's what I'm glad about, because like there are some people that just want the method straight away. And of course, that's fine as well. You know, like, especially if you're already a confident performer and you're comfortable in front of an audience, if you just want the method, take the method, learn it, and then go and do it, that's fine. But what I think more and more people are getting interested in is just some of the longer, because traditionally when you're teaching something, it's like, okay, here's the effect, here's how it works, here it is from another angle, here's a variation, do this, do this, do this, and there you go. But I think now more than ever, people are getting more interested into the extra insights that creators have to offer. You know, if I buy a download today, I don't want to just learn the method. I want to hear the creator talking about one time this routine messed up in front of an audience and what they did about that. I want to hear about the time they did this and the routine was at its best. You know, were there any coincidences that happened when you performed this? Did something incredible happen? What was the worst thing that happened when you were performing that? What advice would you have for me if I, you know, because I think it just gives you further insight into the routine, the creator, how they go about performing. Because it's one thing showing something to a camera or with a little audience here, like, oh, here's the routine you're going to learn. But then it's another thing just hearing about it and letting the creator speak freely and openly about whatever comes to mind that, of course, concerns the routine. Because I've seen downloads where the creator will just say one line or one thing, and that's made me go, oh, that is brilliant. I love the routine, but that one single line you've just said there has just changed my perspective on something. And I think not only do people get more for their money, and not only is it more engaging to watch, but it's just like nourishment for the mind. It's nutritious. It's like, just tell me stuff. Share with me things that you think I'll benefit from. Yes, there's the routine, but talk to me about so much more stuff involving this as well. And then it just does help us learn more. We you know, imagine if you bought a fictional book with an incredible story that was only 3 pages long and it said, oh yeah, the guy wakes up, falls in love, dies at the end. You'd be like, oh, well, I read the story, but it didn't give me much. But then when these pages are full of this incredible thing, it just takes you on a journey. And I'm not saying every magic download has to be a journey, but I think they should at least have something that just engages your mind and your imagination and just kind of inspires you to go out there and perform this with all of these other little things you've learned as well. Because I'm guilty of this, and I know many other like creators are as well. I'll be talking about one thing and then I'll just completely kind of go off topic a little bit to talk about something else that this happened to remind me of. But then people have come to me afterwards and said, you know what, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's changed how I do this other routine that's got nothing to do with you, or that's changed how I even walk out in front of my audience. And I don't know, I just think if creators want to help people become better magicians or mentalists, then give them more than just the method. Give them just, if you've got however many years experience, let that experience show. You know, like, let that, I don't know. I think buying a method is one thing, but buying insights into a creator's personal life and performance life and everything that goes with it is so much more special, I think. And it's so much more rewarding as well. And it does help people become better performers. Not just recycle, oh, here's the routine I learned yesterday. And then it becomes, well, not only is this the routine I learned yesterday, but I perform it in this way now because of this or because of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and some of them are lengthy as well. You know, like, fair play to anybody that can sit and listen to my voice drone on for about 2 hours when I'm rambling on about mentalism or whatever. But, you know, if I can say at least one thing that makes someone go, I love that, then I'm happy.
It was brilliant. I've loved everything that you brought out, especially, you know, all of the newer stuff. Incredible. And as somebody who's worked with the 1914 on projects, I can say that it was a wonderful experience. It really was. Absolutely.
So wonderful. Much fun, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Before we move off to 1914, let me ask you one question. You've known Dee Krister for a long time, way longer than I've known him. He's such a nice guy. He's one of the most friendly people that I know, and he'll help anybody. Nobody, Lewis, nobody is that nice. Have you got any dirt on the guy? Because honestly, he's like a shining beacon of light, but surely nobody's that nice. You know, surely there's something you can share about D. That's because at the moment I look at him and he's pretty much damn near perfect.
Well, I wish I could say something negative about D, but honestly, he's a great guy. Yep, it's certainly not standing in the corner right now threatening to kill me if I say anything bad about him.
I love that.
Yeah, do you know what? I can't think of a single thing. I mean, yeah, he is great. And do you know what it is? I think it's because he's just genuinely passionate about magic and mentalism. And not only that, but the production side of things as well. The guy knows more about cameras and filming things than pretty much anybody else I know. And that's it. It's his passion that drives him in these things. And that's why he's always really enthusiastic when you meet him. And because he loves magic as well, you'll show him something and he gives it his full 110% of his attention. Because again, that's a passion for, he understands that this is his art. And not only is he practicing his art, he's also living it. And he sees that in other people as well. So if you're enthusiastic about magic or mentalism and you meet him, he's gonna mirror your enthusiasm and you'll get on great with him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's move away from creating for a bit. I want to ask you a couple of other questions before we wrap things up. Obviously, we've talked about you as a performer and you've performed in so many amazing situations. You mentioned earlier on about your club and you talked about the club. Would you mind sharing that? I know that there's a club that you work at. I know that you're a part of it,
So it's called The Oracle, So it's also named after, or maybe I shouldn't say, but there's a very significant historical meaning behind the name and the reason why it's called The Oracle. But essentially, it all started with my friend Ben Francis, who I've known for well over 10 years. He's a professional magician, really good as well. And in the UK, of course, magic is very popular, but for some reason in Liverpool, it just wasn't. Of course, it was when it was like theatres and whatever, but in terms of bars and restaurants, which also happens to be my favourite, and it's also Ben's favourite, like walk around, I love that stuff. There was never a lot of it in Liverpool. And we just wanted to do magic. And at the time, I was doing magic as well before mentalism. We just wanted to do magic. We just wanted to be full-time magicians, but we always had to travel outside of Liverpool for gigs. Even if we went over to the next city, which is only Manchester, there was always more gigs there than there was in Liverpool. And we'd approach so many bars and so many restaurants, and they just couldn't quite grasp why it'd not only be fun, but also beneficial to their business and things like that. They just couldn't quite grasp it. And so one day, not too long ago, Ben was like, you know what? I'm sick of this. I want to be able to perform in my hometown in a nice cocktail bar. That's what I would love. So he did everything he needed to do to arrange that and make that happen. And then he called in a team of people he trusted. So there was Terry, who's another incredible magician. We've got Luke, who's just the most incredible bartender. And then there was me, and we all just kind of worked together. Of course, it's mostly Ben, but you know, with the input of all of us, we just kind of put this together, and then we now sort of run the place, make sure everything happens smoothly and how we would want it to, whilst also performing in there as well. And it's the only magic venue in the city, in fact, in this whole corner of the country, and people love it. It's been a great success. I mean, of course, we've had the lockdowns and the restrictions and stuff like that. But, we open up again on the 20th of this month, and already people are like looking forward to it. They're really excited about coming back. The thing that's a little bit difficult, though, I mean, in time, we will be doing shows and ticketed events and things like that and having guest magicians in. The only thing that's difficult is, as long as we're open, you're guaranteed to see some magic. And we're open for about 8 hours a night, which means we're doing magic from the moment we open until the moment we close, like walk around as well. So it's not like a typical gig where you turn up and you do 2 hours and then you leave. It's the whole evening. But again, it's not easy because of the amount of energy it takes, but at the same time, it is easy because it's something we're passionate about, and it becomes easier because this is something we want. We want to give people this experience. We want it so that nobody will ever miss the magician or the mentalist or whatever. We want to know that if you walk through the door while we're open, we'll sit you down, we'll get some incredible cocktails, and you're going to see something mind-blowing. And that's the experience we want to give people. We want them to leave going, that was just incredible. I can't wait to go back next week. So even from everything from our guest experience, so the customer service to the performance to the drinks, we're just doing our best with everything to give people the greatest experience we can, because we ask ourselves, how would we want to be treated? What experience would we want if we went to this place? And then we just make that happen for them. And it's so rewarding. It really is. And it means we get so much more practice in as well. If there's new routines we want to test, you know, I could create one routine in the evening before I go there that I've never performed before. And by the end of that evening, I'll have a pretty good idea of what works in the routine and what doesn't. Then I can just refine it over the weeks and months and turn it into something special. So it is really good and really fun. And the bar is like Victorian era themed. So it's meant to be like taking a step back into the year 1902. So the walls are nice green, you know, the like the green cover of Expert at the Card Table. The seat covers are green. It kind of looks like a living room. If you didn't know the bar was there, you would just walk right past it because there's no windows from the outside. It's just a black door with an old fashioned lantern above it. And you've got to knock on the door and we'll come and let you in. So it's like a little speakeasy. But it's really good. And there's loads of little Easter eggs in there for magicians as well. So magicians will walk in and go, oh, that's clever. I like what you've done there. And they'll just see all these little things that only magicians would understand.
That's cool.
So it's great fun. It really is.
Do you have a website so that if people are in the area, they can come down and support you?
Yep. So it's just theoracle.bar. That's it. If you search for theoracle.bar, you'll find it. And we're also on Instagram as well, if you search for the Oracle Bar.
The Oracle Bar on Instagram, the Oracle Bar. That's fantastic. That's amazing. I'm allowed to leave my house, I am absolutely 100%
going over there. Oh, yeah, please do. You're welcome anytime. Same goes for anybody watching this. If you're ever in the area, please come and see us at the Oracle. Check our opening times on the website and come and hang out with us. Come and jam with us.
That's fantastic. Well, let me ask you one more question. Which is,
yeah,
what's next for you, Lewis? I mean, you've talked through this interview about how you don't have a clear path and you kind of go where things take you and you open to opportunities. And at the moment you're doing this, and that might not be the case in 3 months or 6 months or 12 months, which is a fantastic attitude to have. But are there any magical bucket? Is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you want to achieve? You've done so much throughout your career. You're a creator. You know, you're a performer. You've performed at a very high level. You're a very respected mentalist. You've released, in my opinion, at any rate, the definitive work on Revelations. And you've only just got started. I know that you're working on other projects with the 1914, and there's other stuff that's going to be released. What's left? Is there anything that you want to achieve that you haven't? Where would you see yourself going from a performing point of view in the future?
So 2019 was a sort of life-changing year for me, because that was when I spent a few weeks in the Amazon rainforest.
What?
And while I was... Didn't you know this?
No.
Oh, Craig. I spent... So I've always been into, again, it's interesting this has come full circle, like the greatest mysteries in the world and everything outside of what we're immediately familiar with. And I'd gotten into, I was looking at various magical practices from around the world that didn't involve deception or trickery or entertainment. Like, what else is there historically? And there's so much. It was like, where do I even begin? So I was like, okay, I'll look into shamanism. And I was like, oh, shamanism, that's a cool thing. I could be a shaman. Yeah, like, you know, I'm doing mentalism. I could give it a bit of a cool thing. And then I immersed myself in the sort of philosophy and the tradition and the practice. And then I thought the only way I can learn any more is if I, jump right into this. So I'd arranged to get myself right into the middle of the Amazon rainforest. So I flew from Stockholm in Sweden to Amsterdam, then from Amsterdam to Lima, which is the capital of Peru. We then took a flight from Lima to Iquitos, which is a city surrounded by jungle. It's inaccessible by road. And then there was a few hours in a van right off into the jungle where the road ended. And then we had to jump out and then do a walk through the rainforest to get to the settlement. And so I was there for about 3 weeks, but I only spent 10 days in the middle of the rainforest. And so that was, I was there with an indigenous tribal community, and they had their traditional healer, their shaman. And I didn't know what to expect. I knew I was there to learn. I knew I was there to be taught anything I could learn about their way of life and experience a few things. And I thought, well, as a mentalist and a magician or somebody with that mindset who can spot methods to things, I thought, I'll keep my eyes open. I'm not going to say anything. I'll just experience it. Wouldn't it be interesting if in the middle of the jungle, if they're doing tricks as well? What's going on here? And I can honestly say I didn't see any deception, any trickery. In fact, the whole experience was so eye-opening and mind-blowing for me that when I was on the plane on the way home, I was like, you know what? I'm done with mentalism. I can't, like, what am I doing? What is this nonsense I am doing? And I was done with mentalism because, yeah, completely I was done with it because the whole experience was just so eye-opening. Like, I mean, I won't go into too much detail, but just the nature of human consciousness and how we experience reality and everything outside of, again, what we are familiar with. And these aren't things that sort of contradict science or anything like that. In fact, a lot of this is very scientific as well. And if you approach it with a scientific Western mindset, you can still get a lot from this. It's not just like they're in the jungle doing rituals and they don't know what they're doing. It's actually very, very clever. And so after experiencing all of that, I was on the plane thinking, you know what, like, how can I think I'm doing anything profound at all when that is going on?
Yeah.
This is so incredible. Like, what am I even doing? What's the point? So I gave up. And then not long after that, I found my way back to mentalism because I was then I was like picking up old tools with new hands rather than new tools with old hands. I saw it in a whole new way. And I was like, you know what? The people of the rainforest or any community that has traditional healers or shamanic practices or whatever, they don't need everyone in the world to go and experience that. They just rely on those that do go there to then take what they've found back into their own lives and sort of share that with those they come into contact with. And if they can teach or pass on anything, then they're relying on people to do that. So I was like, okay, well, I'm fascinated with mystery. I'm fascinated with consciousness. I'm fascinated with everything that's unknown or mysterious. So mentalism could potentially be my channel to explore that or to present that, you know. So now for me, mentalism is a symbolic or theatrical representation of something greater than the act itself. So when I do mentalism now, it's no longer about, oh, look at me with my skills, or oh, isn't this fun? It's like, this is just symbolic of a much greater thing. So it's kind of like, you know, if an artist paints a picture of a rainbow, we don't think that's a rainbow. We know it represents a rainbow. And that's what I'm doing with mentalism as well. It doesn't have to be the thing itself. It just has to represent the thing I'm trying to, like the message I'm trying to get across.
Yeah.
So since then, I did talks and lectures in various places. Again, just talking about consciousness and human capacity and that whole what if we step outside of everything we've been taught and engage with the world objectively rather than subjectively based on our beliefs and opinions and ideas and thoughts and likes and dislikes and behaviors. What else is there? What is there when we have the willingness to step outside of that? And then of course I was still using a lot of mentalism. I was doing full-blown Q&A acts and whatever else. Not because I'm trying to convince anybody that I can do anything, but just because that is the best way for me to demonstrate the things that I'm talking about and the things I want people to engage with and yeah. and think about, and not just think, but also feel. Because the only thing stopping mentalism from being real is mentalists. Because because the thing is, the feeling of it is real, the experience is, they don't need to believe that you have some sort of skill, because if they do that, it's a conscious thought, it's a rational thinking way of knowing, but they can know something exists just by feeling it. They don't have to logically go, okay, I felt that, therefore he must have this. They don't need to do that. As long as they feel it, that's what's real. It's like when you watch a film and you start crying because it's so emotional. You're crying real tears based on something that wasn't real. But that feeling within you is still real, and that's what I'm trying to get at. I'm trying to do that in a way that kind of just sheds a little bit of light on mystery and the unknown and things like that. So my path and direction now is to just continue to explore that. And the only question I ask myself, and if there's anybody watching this that could learn something from this, it's if you woke up tomorrow morning and could suddenly do all of your routines without the need for a method, if you had genuine psychic abilities or the ability to read minds, if you could do that, that would be amazing. You'd show people and they would experience that. But if you didn't wake up with those abilities and instead you stuck with your methods and your scripts and your routines and your presentations, and you go out and do that, the end result is still going to be the same. So whether you perform with real psychic ability or whether you perform with methods, what that actually does to somebody is exactly the same. So luckily, you don't need to wake up tomorrow morning with real psychic powers, because the end result is still the same. You're doing it anyway. So don't take that away. I mean, of course, you don't have to present it as real or claim anything, but you know what? It's real in them. Let them have it, because the only thing getting in the way of that being real is the performer. Just let it be what it is. When you if you walk into an art gallery, you can see the most beautiful painting. The artist isn't standing next to that painting going, oh yeah, here's how I want you to feel when you look at this. They just let you experience it for what it is. It's there. Some will love it, some will hate it, some will laugh, some will cry. Let them experience it in their own way.
Wow.
So that's kind of the path. I mean, I could sit and talk about that for hours, but that's kind of the path I'm on now. I'm just taking, or at least I'm seeking universal mystery and trying to translate that into my performances, because then it's like a theatrical teaching in some way.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I'm trying to be some sort of teacher, but there's still something to be learned from the experience itself. That's... because I too will learn from that.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. This
interview... So that's kind of the path I'm on now.
Wow, this interview has been phenomenal. Your thinking behind magic is really different to pretty much anybody I've ever interviewed. But also, really, really, yeah, just I'm blown away, Lewis. I mean, I'm blown away. I normally know what I'm going to say. I'm just completely blown away with stuff. This has been a masterclass. It really has.
It's been fun. It's been great.
No, it's been amazing, mate. It really has. This interview has been amazing. I absolutely loved it. It's one of my favorite interviews. Let me ask you a question. If people want to connect with you, mm-hmm. how can they do that? I mean, obviously, outside of everything that you have talked about and your philosophies of magic and mentalism, you are also, goes without saying, very prolific on Instagram. And, I believe there is a course coming out on the 1914 soon on how to do the perfect pose for an Instagram photo by Lewis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be 4 hours long. And it's going to be a start to finish masterclass in how to get those Instagram shots.
I really need to know that. I really do. My Instagram
game. You're the one person that buys it.
My Instagram game is weak, my friend. So where can people connect with you? What's the best way to get for me?
So the only social media I have is Instagram. So send me a message on there or shoot me an email through my website. That's the best way to get in touch with me. And if anybody has any questions about anything I've been waffling on about, just let me know. Because this is the kind of thing I could sit and talk about for hours on. So, I imagine there'll be at least one or two things I've mentioned that will make somebody watching this go, oh, I would like to hear more about that. So if that's you, then just message me and I'll go into further detail on that. Or if anybody watching this is totally against anything I've said, please get in touch with me as well, because without disagreement, no progress can be made. If we're all in agreement on things, then we wouldn't get anywhere. We'd all just sit around going, yep, good. So yeah, if there's anyone watching this that has anything against what I've said, please get in touch. We'll talk about that, and that'll be great for the both of us as well. So
perfect. Yeah. Absolutely perfect. And can you give us a sneak peek of anything that you've got coming out with the 1914 in the future? I mean, are you going to be able to top the Revelation? You don't have to tell me what it is, but are you going to be able to top Revelations? And because that was that, you hit it out of the park with that.
So, okay. One thing I will mention that I'm very, very excited about is I notice a lot more mentalists are getting more and more into doing tarot readings now. And for many years, tarot's had quite a negative, you know, because it's taken by people in the New Age community and so-called psychics that claim to be able to predict your future, tell you potentially harmful things about your own life that would have been okay if you didn't go and see them in the first place. So I think it's about time. I mean, there's still plenty of incredible work on tarot out there anyway, but without any sort of spiritual belief or connection to them, I'm going to be doing a project with the 1914 and it's going to be a lengthy project as well, but and I won't kind of explain what happens. I'm just going to say tarot, just expect something tarot related for me coming soon, and this is going to be something incredible.
Wow, what a tease you are. That sounds amazing.
I'm already sitting here thinking, oh, have I said too much? But no. Quite a lengthy project, tarot.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all I need to know.
I'm really excited about that. And it's going to be something, I mean, you don't even have to care about tarot. I think this is going to be something for everyone. You don't have to be in the small group that kind of already wants to do tarot. Like there'll be something in there for everyone. Even if you watch the whole thing and never do anything related to tarot, there'll be something in there for you.
And that's that. I firmly believe that, because that's what I got from the Revelations project. You know, I'm not a mentalist. I couldn't pull off mentalism if my life depended on it. I'm just not that person. But I learned so much from watching your Revelations project and watching you and Dee on the Shadow Wallet as well. Both of you are phenomenal on that. Watching you in those two new projects, I've learned so much as a magician that I've been able to incorporate into my work. And I think that's important to understand. You know, if you're wanting to study how to become a better performer, you don't blindly say, well, I'm not going to look at that project because I'm not a mentalist. I don't need to know how to reveal this information, or I'm not into tarot reading. I'm not going to watch that project because I don't believe in tarot. It's still viable to watch, because you can learn so much
totally
different directions.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That's the thing. Like, a chef that only makes Italian food, it doesn't mean he's not going to try Chinese food, or a chef that only makes Chinese food. You know, that's the thing, isn't it? You don't have to. Yes, you've got your own thing that you do, but you might as well just have a look, and there could be something there that changes at least one thing, or inspires you to do something else, or even potentially gets you into performing a bit of mentalism. Who knows? I think, because the thing is, I do full-time mentalism, but I'm still buying magic. I'm still watching magic downloads. Even if I don't perform in it, I just want to soak it all in. Not only is it fun for me to watch because I love magic anyway, but I'll learn so much. And the thing is, Craig, with that project that we shot with you recently, I learned so much from that. And I was so lucky to be there to see that whole thing, because you just absolutely knocked it out of the ballpark on every single performance. But then all the routines, and when you're explaining the methods, and I'm glad I was there to see you explain the methods, because you performed a few things and I had no clue, even though I'd seen you perform them multiple times that day. I was still stood there thinking, I don't know how he does that. I've got no clue. And then when I saw the method, I was like, oh, that's amazing. There's things there that I'll definitely perform. There's things there that I won't perform, but God, did I learn from them? Absolutely. And that's what's important to me.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's very, very important that you take that approach, and you don't just blink a vision. I am putting myself in this little box, so all I ever want to absorb is information about that little box, because there's an entire world.
Yeah, exactly.
Out there. Exactly. You know, You know,
totally.
Yeah. Lewis, it's been incredible. It really has.
Oh, it's, I've had a great time. I've loved this.
You are brilliant. And you know what? In the future, I'd like to get you on Talk Magic again.
Do another.
Perhaps we can talk about the new project when it comes out.
Absolutely.
That would be amazing. But yeah, I mean, you're the man. You really are. So thank you so much. Make sure, guys.
Oh, Craig, thank you.
Oh, you really are. Make sure, guys, that you follow Lewis. I'm going to put all of his social media links down below. And he is one of the nicest guys in magic, stroke mentalism, stroke performing, stroke shaman, everything. He's one of the nicest guys I know. So if you've got questions, hit him up. I'm sure he'll answer them for you. And if you want to leave a comment down in this video, leave a comment down below in this YouTube video, because I know that you'll see it and you'll be able to answer. Mate, thank you so much.
Oh, this has been amazing. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thanks for finding the time. Guys,
thank you, Craig,
so much for tuning into another Talk Magic. This has been one of my favorite ones. Let me know what you think in the comments down below. If you want to see more videos like this, do me a favor, subscribe to the channel, like the video. Remember, we're putting 24 videos up a week. So we're back tomorrow with one at 2, one at 6, one at 9. So I'll see you then. Guys, thanks very much for watching.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel, Magic TV, which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.